97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, California Bill 206 and the NC2A's reaction to it. Our guest today, Mark Edelman, law professor at Baruch College in New York City. So, Mark, without getting down into the weeds, because that's so easy to do with legal stuff, what is California Bill 206?
California Bill 206 creates a mandate that public and private colleges based in California must allow their athletes to control the rights to their own names and likenesses for commercial purposes.
All right. So who on college campuses doesn't have those rights already?
As a matter of California law, one would think all of these athletes have these rights. However, based upon the rules that have been put in place by the National Collegiate Athletic Association, individual member colleges that are part of the NCAA have been instructed that they may not allow college athletes to monetize their names or their likenesses.
All right, so, but non-athletes, everybody else on campus, can do this.
Absolutely right. A typical college student is completely free to use his or her name recognition or skill in any other area to sell his or her name or likeness. So, for example, if you have a college student who's famous because he's a dancer or she's famous because she's a singer, they probably will be endorsing products of some type or another. It's only the athletes that play in the NCAA sports that are forbidden from doing so.
And they're forbidden why?
It depends who you want to believe. The NCAA will purport it's this grand notion of amateurism, that nobody that's playing a sport is making money. And they purport that fans of the sport like it that way. But to be very frank, from an economic point of view, there are only so many sponsorships to go around. And the reality is the college coaches and athletic directors themselves would be competing with the athletes for desirable opportunities to endorse things like sneakers or local bookstores or pizzeria. And by disallowing the college athletes from making money in this manner, it keeps more money in the hands of the college coaches, athletic directors, and administrators.
One place, Mark, that we've seen them spend that money, not the coaches themselves, but the athletics departments, is on facilities for athletes. Is that not a form of payment?
I would argue it is. A few years back, I had the opportunity to speak at the University of Oregon Law School on college athlete rights. At the end of the symposium, they brought me into the Oregon locker room. Because the NCAA rules prevent any member school from compensating their athletes in kind, Phil Knight's huge donation to the Oregon football program was used to build locker rooms that included Turkish tile urinals and cell foam regulating temperatures in the locker room facilities and the individual lockers. So, of course, there are all types of different ways in which colleges try to compensate their athletes. Payments directly and indirectly are just forms which the NCAA say are impermissible.
All right. So one of the arguments is if California allows this of its athletes, then all the California schools have a competitive advantage.
You know, they say that, but the reality is the California schools only would have a competitive advantage so long as other states and other schools choose not to follow suit. There is nothing that prevents other public or private colleges from deciding they want to grant the same rights to their athletes, but for the private rules of a private trade association, which at least very arguably are in violation of antitrust laws as they currently stand.
So that trade association is made up of colleges and universities. So would it not be the University of whatever telling the University of California, you can't do this?
Well, under the current rules, you have an agreement amongst 1,200 member colleges. Each college in this agreement is saying not only are we choosing not to allow athletes to make pay, but we are disallowing you from doing that as well. Now, if we looked at this behavior in any other type of industry, except for college athletics, that sounds like a concerted refusal to deal, a group boycott, and a form of wage-fixing restraints. Now, we are acting as a society under this presumed belief that college athletics is somehow different from any other industry in the world, and that these wage-fixing restraints in college athletes, in college athletics, are somehow permissible. And I don't believe that is indeed the case.
All right, so where does federal antitrust law come into this discussion?
Well, let's leave aside the California statute for a moment. Even if the California statute did not exist, my view, as someone who's a professor of sports and antitrust and who practiced antitrust law at Skadden Arps, amongst other places, is that the agreement amongst 1,200 member colleges that make up the NCAA to disallow any other member college from allowing athletes to endorse products for money is a wage-fixing restraint that violates Section 1 of the Sherman Act. So even without this California rule, it seems that the underlying restraint is illegal. Now, we've seen various restraints involving college sports challenged in recent years. We've seen the limitation of nothing that the athletes are allowed to have based upon the use of their likenesses on television challenged successfully in O'Bannon. And we see also other restraints with respect to the compensation of athletes up to a certain amount challenged successfully in Jenkins. So even if not for the California rule, the NCAA's internal agreement amongst member schools to prevent athletes from endorsing products seems very subject for an antitrust challenge.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Mark Edelman, a law professor at Baruch College. We're talking about California Bill 206 and the NC2A's reaction to it. Mark, you wrote that the NC2A really can't hope to I guess we'll put it this way. The NC2A's only hope is to keep this from becoming law, because once it does become law, if it does, then the NC2A would be saying you have to disregard the law of your state and follow the rules of our association.
That is correct. And in fact, a rule of this nature, I believe, is very likely to hold up in court. Some purported scholars in this marketplace are trying to claim that somehow the California rule runs affront to interstate commerce. But if you look carefully at jurisprudence involving California state law over the past 15 to 20 years, you will see that numerous California bills that have been intended to give greater rights to workers, citizens, in one case, even animals within the state of California have been upheld and have not been found to create commerce clause issues.
All right. So I want to read you a quote from the Stillwater News Press. This was written by an Oklahoma State junior. So a college student wrote this. And it is an opinion piece. But he starts this way. College sports is on the edge of a revolution, and the NC2A is sweating. Do you think that's the case?
I think it's absolutely true. You know, the first time that I had written on the NCAA no endorsement rules and their potential to be found to violate antitrust law was when I was a 2L at Michigan Law School back in 2002. 17 years later, we still have had very little, if any, change. But thanks to the internet and the ability of academics and practitioners to exchange ideas in a well-read forum, we're finally beginning to see, at least in California and in North Carolina, efforts by state legislatures to push forward a change to the status quo. I think the NCAA will survive and survive well after these changes, But the period in time in which this trade association could purport to have this holier-than-thou standards, and in essence allow a very small number of coaches and athletic directors to make huge sums of money at the expense of hard-working lower- and middle-income college athletes, looks like it will soon pass, and as well it should.
So that is this why the NC2A is so out front in trying to, I won't say stop this from becoming law, but watering it down to the point that it's not going to be effective anyway?
I mean, let's understand what the NCAA really is. The NCAA is a trade association that is made up of member colleges. Now, just about every member college that's a part of the NCAA is a nonprofit, which means that we don't have shareholders that get to keep the money at the end of the day, meaning that the money that's derived from college sports has to go somewhere. Now, some of the money is reinvested in the university, but large sums of this money are given to athletic directors and coaches, the very people that vote on the NCAA rules, as a form of quasi-profit based upon the work that they do. Now, if that money were had to be allocated in some way to the athletes as well, or if the athletes were even competing for endorsement deals against the coaches and athletic directors, the people that are voting on NCAA policy figure to make less money. And that's very much what they are seeking to avoid.
So if this were to pass, and certainly if it were to become more widespread than just in California, the days of the $12 million coach or the lazy river for the football team only, those days would be gone?
You know, I wouldn't even go that far. If you look at the California bill, it is a very moderate bill. You know, the bill does not attempt to require colleges to pay their athletes any amount of money. It doesn't even acknowledge employee status on the athletes. So there is no amount of money that's coming directly through the college system that would be funneled to the athletes. It's very moderate because what it seems to require at a minimum is to allow the college athletes to sell their names and likenesses to third parties. Reasonable minds could disagree as to whether it's anything more, which simply means that the college coach and athletic director, to a limited extent, will find itself competing with its elite athletes for signing deals with sneaker companies like Nike and Adidas. And instead of operating in the world which we operate in today, where we continue to find assistant coaches accepting bribes to funnel athletes to certain schools, well, perhaps the athletes would be able to sign endorsements directly and let that induce them to the school of their choice.
So we're not talking about television money being redistributed. We're talking about Joe Smith's star quarterback who does a commercial for the tire company in town.
That's my interpretation of the bill. A reasonable interpretation might go even further and go to television revenue, but it's not clear that the bill even goes that far.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of California Bill 206 and what the NC2A is doing trying to quash that bill becoming law. Our guest is Mark Edelman, professor at Baruch College in New York City. So, Mark, is that the only chance the NC2A has is to keep this from becoming law? Because once it, let's say it becomes law, and the NC2A says, you, college athlete in California, you are following state law, but by doing so, you are breaking our rules, and we're not going to let you and your teammates compete in the championship in your sport.
Well, let's look at this NCAA threat. Now, there are two possibilities. One is it's merely a threat that the NCAA doesn't plan on enforcing. The other is that the NCAA really does plan on following through with the threat and preventing athletes at these California schools from competing. Now, if the NCAA is just threatening as a way of playing chicken and trying to make these rules go away, it seems like a bad threat. If the NCAA is actually sincere about doing so, well, then let's look at the legality of the NCAA's behavior. Now, the NCAA is a monopolist trade association, and the threat that the NCAA is making is to ban a limited number of colleges from competing in their monopoly association because those colleges are not following a rule that was passed by the members that seeks to prevent any college from allowing their athletes to earn compensation. If you look at the rule in that nature, within the rubric of antitrust law, that sounds like a group boycott of certain schools based upon the schools engaging in economic competition within a free market. And that, more likely than not, would be found to violate Section 1 of the Sherman Act, which is antitrust law.
It sounds like the very definition of antitrust.
Yes. So in other words, the very behavior that the NCAA is threatening to do would almost certainly be giving rise to an antitrust lawsuit against the NCAA. And whereas a reasonable argument could be made, even without the California rule, that preventing the athletes from earning compensation would violate Section 1 of the Sherman Act, if you look at antitrust law's rule of reason that looks at economic pro and anti-competitive effects, throw in the fact that these colleges are being boycotted for engaging in the very form of economic competition that they are mandated to engage in by state law, I think the NCAA is setting itself up for a very big antitrust law.
So I don't think the NCAA wants it to get to that point. So the idea is to let's mitigate this as much as possible. You know, if you can get into the minds of the powers that be at the NCAA?
I think the NCAA is trying to scare California legislatures. Now, these legislators in California have proposed a bill because they want to make the situation better for college athletes in their state. They want to make it fairer and more equitable. And what the NCAA is saying to these legislators is, if you go ahead and do what you want to do, we are going to make sure the athletes are even worse off, and it's going to be all your fault. And they are trying to scare the legislators away from implementing a very reasonable bill. Now, the reality is if the NCAA does follow through with this threat and does seek to ban the California athletes in those schools, they will be making things worse for the athletes in the short term. But the NCAA's decision to do so, in my expert view, as someone who's practiced antitrust law and taught it for many years, is that the NCAA would very likely be found to have violated antitrust law. And the NCAA would find itself both enjoined from following through on the boycott and potentially owing very large sums of money to the athletes that have been the victims of this group boycott.
All right. So prognostication from you, how likely is it that this becomes law in California?
I give it a 50-50 shot. I think the law is strong. I think it's prudent. I think it'd be enhanced with small amounts of tweaks. And I say that the California legislators deserve a lot of credit for moving forward with a bill that will increase the rights of male and female college students. But the NCAA is a very powerful association with an incredibly strong lobbying arm. Today they're playing the fear tactic. Tomorrow they might be rubbing arms. They have scared a lot of well-meaning people away from doing a lot of good things in the past. And as much as this bill is good and should go through, don't underestimate Mark Emmert and the team at the NCAA's ability to attempt to scare away legislators from doing what's ethically right.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Mark Edelman. Thanks also to engineer Michael Coe. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.